This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.
Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to Screen Talk with me, Dan Clark. Now, this is the last show of the year, and actually the last show I'm doing for a couple of months, actually. But I'll be back, to quote Sylvester Stallone. I've loved doing this show, and while I'm here, a little sentimental moment, I'd like to thank my producer, my wonderful producer, who's done the show all year. He's moving to Canada next year. He's the wonderful Adam Johnson. No, not that Adam Johnson, although he probably wants to move to Canada as well. Adam, my Adam, can you take the other Adam with you? No, he doesn't want to take him. He's actually, you're going under a different name now. Is it Adam P. Johnson or something? Something like that. I want to do a documentary at some point about people who have namesakes that have somehow maybe damaged their lives. Can you imagine if you were also called like Ian Huntley or James Savile or Rolf Harris or something? Can you imagine that? Do you think there's more than one Rolf Harris? There might be. And Rolf isn't a common name, but you never know. So I remember someone called Dan Clark was trending on Twitter, and I was gutted it wasn't me. It was just some racing driver. Anyway, that's a completely different show there, but we're going to work on that. If anyone's got any stories, tweet us. I say that, but no one ever does. So here on this show, we discuss film and television, but today's show is going to be a bit different because, by different, I mean completely unprepared and a little bit chaotic. So if this is the first show that you've ever listened to of Screen Talk, and it is a disaster, then just don't judge us on today. But if it's brilliant, then maybe this is what we'll do. We'll do this every week. We'll just sort of blag it and wing it. I'm being a little bit glib because I have actually put a little bit of thought into today's show because it's a Christmas show. So I've prepared some songs. I've got a guest. I have actually got a guest. And this is who I decided we should have. It's been a great year. I've had so many wonderful guests, but still in possibly my top five guests of the whole year was the person that kickstarted this show back in March, I think it was, and that is the wonderful Brett Goldstein. He's going to sit in and we're going to talk Christmas movies, favourite movies of the year, maybe our least favourite movies of the year, if we're daring to be a little bit cynical. So he's going to be with me in a minute. I'm going to kickstart the show with a song. Normally we do songs that have been in films or TV shows or written for films and TV shows. I think this has probably been in many films and TV shows, but not one specific. But because it's Christmas, I think we should really just focus on mostly Christmas-themed songs. This is Let It Snow by Dean Martin.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. And the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you'd love me so, let it snow, let it snow and snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really grab me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. Oh, the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Oh, that's got me all like feeling warm and fuzzy. Now I know it's been featured in many different films, that actual song, but something happened to me the other day. So to give you the backstory, I've always sung at Christmas this. I've sung, "Oh, the weather outside is frightful, dum-de-dum delightful." I've always sung that, and I don't know where it came from. And I watched Die Hard the other night, and it's what Al Powell, the black cop who helps Bruce Willis. I'm looking at my guest for some sort of affirmation here, but he's given me nothing. It's what he sings just before he goes to the Nakatomi building and, you know, he gets involved in that storyline. He sings Dum-de-dum Delightful, and it's like, that's where I've sung that for like 20 years, not knowing where it comes from. So my first guest, well, my only real guest today, the only real person that matters is, of course, Brett Goldstein. He was our very first guest on this show, and he's been a supporter of this show. He sends me lovely little tweets and texts. Not tweets. You never send me a tweet,
no,
do you?
Never do it in public.
You'd never do it in public. So Brett, this is going well. So, but you know it's live today.
Okay, great.
Yeah, speak closer to the mic.
Hello.
Or even closer.
Hello.
Or pull the mic to you.
Put it in my mouth.
Yeah, put it in your mouth.
Okay.
So our guest today is Brett Goldstein. Now, he's been a supporter of this show. He texts me often and says, "Oh, I love your show," and it makes me feel great. And I've wanted to get him back on the show. This is the first time we're having a guest on twice, but you are bookending the year. Brett Goldstein, how are you, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm fine, and I'm greatly honoured to be bookending what is one of my favourite FUBAR Radio podcasts.
Oh, why have you specified it to just the FUBAR Radio ones?
Because I saw the sign behind you and I thought, I don't want to slag off other FUBAR Radio podcasts.
No. Well, you sort of just did in a way.
In a way.
Well, thank you for all your lovely texts of support. I'd also like to thank everyone that listens. While you're here, Brett, I'd like to thank everyone that listens. During the summer, we were in the top five
really?
Film and TV podcast downloads on iTunes for many, many weeks.
I mean, it's absolutely cracking.
It's smashing, isn't it? It's smashing. Brett, do you... You're Brett Goldstein. You're obviously of Jewish descent.
Mm.
Do you celebrate Christmas?
Sure do.
Do you? Are you from... which side of your family are the Jewish people?
Oh, I mean, I don't think I've understood that Christmas was a religious festival. I thought it was when you just go and watch them up at Christmas Carol and then give each other presents and spend the day together.
Does it have to have a religious... It doesn't have to, but I've just come back from Israel where I've been filming.
Oh yeah, how's that been?
That was a crazy 3 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty mental. For people that don't, obviously everyone who doesn't know, I was filming a web series out there for 3 weeks, and I could tell many, many stories, but that's not what we're doing this show for. But it is interesting doing a show acting on a set where English isn't the first language.
Oh,
and
right. Did you speak Israeli for 3 weeks?
I didn't. That was what was so crazy about it, was the amount of times I went, "And action." And I was like, what's going on? Turning to the guy next to me, "Do you know what we're doing in this scene?" No idea. But it was a wonderful experience. But obviously, the Jewish folk do not celebrate Christmas,
right.
And there were no decorations everywhere. There wasn't all the Christmas hits playing in every single supermarket. And I got back on the 11th of December, and normally by the 11th of December, I'm absolutely sick of it. And it hasn't even happened yet.
But you were delighted.
I came back, and there was all these lights and all the music, and it's probably the first year in many, many years that I almost feel as excited about it being Christmas. Now, before we crack on, you and I talking about, we're going to talk about our favourite Christmas films, but I couldn't do this show without having James Gill.
Listen, you couldn't.
I couldn't do
and
this.
And I wouldn't accept
and
it.
You,
as a
you know James as well
I
as I do.
I love James Gill, and I think he's wonderful.
So, I think, is James with us? James.
Yes.
James Gill.
I am here.
James, I couldn't...
I am live from Lapland.
Oh, wow. You made it.
Yes, I made it. I'm with the big fella now.
There's something.
Santa, not now. I'm on the phone.
There's something about this, just the sound, the tone of hearing a voice on a phone that makes this feel a bit more like credible. Like we're doing some serious news piece.
Yeah.
Like how is it out there? How is it, James?
It is freezing. The reindeers are fine. The fur is thick. They are chomping at the bit for Christmas Eve. Kids, if you're listening, I hope you've been good. They've got a lot of presents to give away.
James, are you excited about Christmas?
I'm excited about every day of the year, so...
He says
Christmas.
That. Here's the pattern of James Gill. He goes, you know me, I'm a really positive guy, and then goes into slagging something off.
Hey, Dan, you know me, I'm a really positive guy, but I can't wait to slag off Rogue One.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Well, let's kickstart with that. You saw Rogue One recently. You actually texted me. You gave it 3.5 stars out of 5.
Yes, 7 out of 10. And over time, I would like to round that down to 6.5 out of 10.
Your hatred for it has grown.
Yeah. Well, I think hatred is a bit strong.
Still enjoy. I mean, overall, I enjoyed it.
Why?
Overall, I'm a positive guy, but I hate it.
Yeah. I'm a positive guy, but I'm going to end my life.
Why were you disappointed? Because I've only heard positive things.
I think it's great.
Brett thinks it's great. Why were you not so keen on it, James?
There's just no wow factor. So every time I see any movie, I'm 3-0 up. I'm on side. It just lacked any wow. I also felt there was no real, there was no director's stamp on it. There was no flourish to it. I never felt like I was watching anything special. I felt like any director could have delivered that movie. I felt like I'd seen it all before.
Okay. Well, that's probably because you had, because it had the Death Star, Darth Vader, and numerous other characters without too many spoilers. But
obviously, you know, Disney have lawyers and we do not, so I need to be very careful. However, obviously there are the rumours that it went in for multiple reshoots. There are the rumours that Tony Gilroy, I'm being very careful here, allegedly, I mean, he was brought in to help with reshoots. Allegedly, it has been reported that he redirected around 40% of the movie. And having seen that film, again, being very careful for legal reasons, I can say that I would possibly believe those rumours.
Okay. Well, Brett, you strongly disagree, right?
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
But the reasons I thought it was great, I can't say, because they would be spoilers.
In all our years of friendship, this is the first thing that Brett and I have ever disagreed on.
Yeah. Is that true?
It is true. Me and James often spoon and just say, I love you and I love everything you love. But this is the first time he rolled over and said, don't touch me.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So,
don't look at me.
So we can now blame Rogue One for the split between you guys.
I just think it's a trial separation, we'll see. But he's already going, when I see it again, I'm marking it even further down.
I must say, the reason Brett loves it, and no, we can't say because it will spoil it, I 100% agree with that reason for loving the movie. And if you've seen the film, you'll know what he means.
Okay,
it does spoil
here's
everything.
Here's what I think, without spoiling anything. I get frustrated with the Marvel films because as much as... I think they're all brilliant. I think they're all so well made and brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But I have got to stage of sort of going, they are kind of the same. They're like, they're all so well done. But you watch them and you go, but it is sort of the same film over and over again. And with the Star Wars thing, they said, oh, we're going to do these anthology films and they're going to be different and standalone. And then you watch that and go, yeah, that is different. That is different from the other Star Wars films. You really actually did something, you tried something different. I don't think it's totally flawless, but it's like, yeah, fair play, that is a different film.
And do you, James, do you have you had conversations with people that disagree with you? Are you in the minority? Because it seems to me that most people seem to enjoy it.
I know a good number of people who like me.
Name them, we want names.
I can't name them.
Give us their Twitter handles.
Okay then, at James Gill's cousin, 67. No, I think a lot of people do agree, and I also think, I predict that movie, because I think word of mouth is spreading now that it's not amazing, And I wonder if it will fall short of that magic $1 billion target.
Yeah, well, you know, for me and my sort of personal journey on in terms of like film and what I care about, it's the money thing doesn't. I mean, obviously it bothers Disney, but it doesn't bother me. I just want to know if it's good or, and also the reshoots thing. It's like if reshoots work, then great, but. You know, it's ridiculous. I'm doing the show and I haven't seen it yet, but there's been a billion things to watch. You know, it's that wonderful time of year.
Obviously, reshoots happen a lot, but it's alleged that they've had two or three reshoots. And I think the more you reshoot something, you are getting further and further away from that director's initial vision. So the point Brett made, I do agree with, because I love the Marvel movies, but yes, they are essentially it's the same gig each time, and you can tell that it's all part of the same universe. I would actually disagree, though, because I did feel that this did feel like another movie by committee obligatory nod to. I've got to be careful here, but let's just say that there are a couple of cameos, and I just thought, oh, that felt like an afterthought.
Okay. So who was it? Ant-Man or Spider-Man? Who did they chuck in there?
When Spider-Man takes down Darth Vader.
Yeah, that bit is weird.
I mean, look, joking aside, it wouldn't surprise me if in 10 years' time it is Darth Vader versus Spider-Man. I mean, the crossover thing is becoming so huge.
It's becoming like a self-parody. I mean, it now appears that that 21 Jump Street Men in Black crossover that sounds like a joke... I think that is actually happening now, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, give me strength.
I mean, I want to see Secrets and Lies. I want to see Secrets and Lies versus Kez. Jeez. That's what I want to see.
Such a good idea.
Right,
I want the Mike Lee and Ken Loach worlds to...
yes! That is amazing!
James, what is... how do you feel about the year generally for film?
Oh, I mean, generally very, very strong. There have been some absolute corkers. So I'll give you my top three in reverse order.
Okay, go.
Number three, Captain America, Civil War.
Okay, yep. Brett's giving the thumbs down on that one.
No.
wait for it. Number two, Hell or High Water.
Okay.
I didn't see that, but I hear it's excellent.
Yep. And number one?
The British dude who directed Hell or High Water also directed Stardup.
Yeah, which is great.
Stardup is terrific. Hell or High Water, I'm going to say this now, if Jeff Bridges doesn't get nominated at least for Best Supporting Actor Oscar, I will eat a pair of Brett Goldstein's underpants.
I mean, why don't you do something you don't normally do?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that's
not exactly a stretch, that one.
I'll join you. And
then number one, Arrival.
Okay.
Lovely.
Okay, what do you think of James's top three there, Brett?
Well, I'm not keen on number three.
Mm-hmm.
I love number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two I haven't seen.
Okay.
Would you like to hear my top
three? Mention for the nice guys as well. Now, if we're talking about money, and I mean you're right there, money shouldn't matter, because I don't think Nice Guys did what it should have done at the box office. But it's out on Home Ents, so please check that movie out. It is wonderful. Russell Crowe's really good, but Ryan Gosling... Oh my god, that dude can do comedy. He might be so good looking that I'm actually giving myself an erection just by thinking about him.
Okay,
but the dude is a brilliant comedy actor as well.
This show has got so homoerotic today, and
can you describe
how you
Yeah, that's true. You do bring homoeroticism wherever you go, Brett.
Can you describe how you give yourself an erection?
No, erection.
What?
Oh, God. I knew this show was going to be a disaster.
No. Mate, Goldstein is what our dynamic has been crying out for. He's the Joe Pesci for our Riggs and Murtaugh.
Oh,
finally.
Okay. Interesting. I'm not even going to begin to ask who is Riggs and who's Murtaugh in this relationship.
Mr. Glover, it's been a pleasure working with you.
So my segue, the Ryan Gosling segue, is were you excited by the Blade Runner trailer this week?
Yes. Now, Denis Villeneuve, oh my God, if I could buy shares in a director, I would lump on Denis Villeneuve. What a dude.
We are both...
Oh, he also directed Arrival, which is my film of the year.
Yeah. We're nodding emphatically with you. We think he's the man of the moment and the man of the future.
What in I my found, opinion, what the, I... The, the, They're lucky to have Denis Villeneuve, let alone Denis Villeneuve lucky to be doing Blade Runner. The other way around, my friends. Blade Runner, possibly the most overrated film of all time. So I think Villeneuve is exactly what the Doctor ordered.
I found it interesting that it was shot, or, you know, from the trailer anyway, it looks almost identical, like, production design-wise, lighting-wise, to the original. It's like he's very much sticking to a template there. It'll be interesting to see if there is any, like, if he subverts it in any way at all. But at the moment, it looks like, you know, it is 100% a sequel. It almost probably doesn't matter that it's 20 years apart or plus. Well, it's probably 30 years, isn't it?
Probably.
Oh my God, 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you say it's an overrated film, but if you watch that film now, you you say, oh my God, that film has not... That film has dated so well. It looks beautiful.
Oh, yes, agreed. Visually, yeah, absolutely. It's beautiful to look at.
And there's nothing like that. There's nothing like Vangelis's sax to just get you in a good sexy mood.
Vangelis's sax all over my face and chest. I couldn't agree more.
Okay, right. So, like I say, today's show has gone in a very interesting... I think because James isn't actually in the studio, he feels like he can say whatever the fuck he likes.
God, it's really brought the devil out in me.
Yeah. You know, I hope that the people around you in Lapland aren't with all their kids, because the stuff you're saying is quite offensive.
Yes, I'm about to walk away to my own private igloo.
So the Golden Globes that were announced end of last week, was it? Or beginning? I'm losing track of time. You know, it's that Christmas thing where every day feels like Sunday, doesn't it, almost?
Oh, can I tell you what my crappiest film of the year was, please?
Oh, well, for the Mr. Positive guy, I'd love to.
So much positivity coming out.
So much positivity. Blade Runner's overrated. Rogue One was shit. You want bursting to tell your worst film of the year. Okay. Of course, go
Hang
for
on
it.
Minute, I'm just gonna punch an elf in the face.
Go on. What
Mike
was your worst?
Mike and Dave need wedding dates.
Okay. Okay. Well, that. I mean, I haven't
what
seen
a
it.
A load of shit.
Oh wow. James, what's happened to you? Are you drinking again during the days?
No. Well, possibly. Listen, you know, I'm a huge Judd Apatow fan. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, what he ended up doing was spawning this mini industry of these naff bromance movies, and it's just a stinker. And he tries so hard to be funny, which is probably its problem. I think it's again, don't get sued. It smacks of some bad improv rather than, you know, because call me old fashioned, but every now and then a watertight script can actually save the day. And Apatow, it does seem he's responsible for giving actors the confidence to believe that they can do improv. Yeah. And I'm afraid not everyone can do improv. Just me and Brett.
What's your opinion on this, Brett?
I haven't seen the film.
No, but the improv thing.
I think you're being your usual positive self, and I think it's actually a lot down to the editing, because having done stuff where you improvise and stuff, people get carried away, and there's always moments of gold. It's just what you choose to leave in your film, really. Mm-hmm. Like, because you can do hours and hours of stuff, and all you got to do is get a minute of good, and that's the bit you use.
True. I think, to sort of slightly defend James, that there is a general notion, forgetting the actual craft of whose decision it was, that it's okay to just, like, let it run a bit longer because everyone's funny, or everyone knows what's funny, you know, rather than going, let's just write a really funny, tight script. But so only, I don't think everyone is great at improv, but there's maybe the
can
feeling.
Can I just say something about improv?
Yeah.
Remember Ryan Stiles?
Yeah.
Why was he not the biggest comedy movie star of all time? Because if we're talking about people who could do improv,
because he needed a rubber ball to be able to do an improv bit.
So funny! Do you remember when you first got into Ryan Stiles on it? It was like the most exciting. You couldn't believe your luck. Yeah. Who is this madman? I just
remember when you had your Ryan Stiles poster above your bed.
On my deathbed, my family will be saying nice things, and my last words will be, why was Ryan Stiles not massive?
Well, look, James, this is where I'm going to dispute with you quite heavily. I think Whose Line Is It Anyway and the likes of Ryan Stiles, who was good at that, is what gave improv a bad name in this country. When you go to America and you see the Groundlings and the people at UCB and you see the mastery of improv and you see why people think that they can do it in films, because actually there are lots of brilliant, brilliant people. But here I think it got a bad name as being this thing where you play party games and it didn't have any sort of character route or narrative route. That's my opinion, James. It feels very weird having a sort of a heavy discussion with someone that's not in the room.
Not I love it, heavy. Mate. It's mate, let's heavy. Just keep improving. I love it.
You think we'll be talking about Aleppo in a minute and then it will get, you know. That's what it feels like. It feels like hearing someone on the phone should be talking about a worthy news report, not about whether we think Ryan Stiles is underrated.
It just, finally, the big issues.
Yeah. Can you imagine if, like, you do a satellite link up on BBC One News about Ryan Stiles?
Here in Aleppo, the big story is, where is Ryan Stiles?
Okay, well, James, just before we go, what films are you looking forward to coming out soon in 2017 or in the...
Manchester by the Sea with Casey Affleck.
Yeah.
We all love Ben Affleck, and we all quite like Brad Pitt. But when you watch a film like The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, I felt for Brad Pitt. I imagine him in his trailer after the first day of shooting, looking in his mirror, thinking, "Oh fucking hell, Casey Affleck's amazing."
So I think probably he would have thought, looking in the mirror, "I'm fit. I'm so fit." Oh, and Casey's really good in this film.
No, he looks in the mirror. He went, "I wish I was as good looking as Brett Goldstein." And why is Ryan Stiles not massive?
Cool back. I agree. I'm really excited about Manchester by the Sea. Apart from anything else, just that there's a film that doesn't have special effects or isn't based on an already existing title or book or remake or comic or two worlds meeting and crossover and universes and all the bloody rest of it. Just a film about some people. I mean, that really makes it sound utterly boring. But
you're putting me off.
Yeah, I've put a lot of people off from watching Manchester by the Sea. And by the way, this isn't a film where they've moved Manchester in the north of England across, you know, it's not Blackpool. That's not what they're saying.
Spoiler alert.
But Casey Affleck, as we all know, like you said in the Jesse James film, and also Gone Baby Gone, which I still think is Ben Affleck's directed film. He's an amazing actor, and finally he's going to get his... I mean, I don't feel too sorry for him, because he's always worked, but he's never seemed to have got his moment in the sun quite like his brother and a lot of his peers.
I agree.
Yeah.
I strongly agree. And I think he'll probably win the Oscar. And then also La La Land.
Very excited about that again.
The Bobby Gosling.
Yeah. What about the films? These are on the best motion picture drama list. Lion and Moonlight. Have you seen either of those or know much about them? This is a question to you, Brett, as well.
Moonlight is the one, from what I hear.
Yeah,
but I haven't seen it.
James, what's on your radar?
Same as Brett. There, I've only heard good things. Not seen either. I'll try Wanglers. If we can do it in the new year, Dan, probably should have kept this for off mic. I'll try Sort as a press screening, my friend.
Okay, I was wondering where you were going with that. On mic that you'll eat Brett Goldstein's pants and that someone has done something over your chest and face. But you'd rather say off mic that you'll get us some press screening tickets because God forbid anyone hears that.
I might come across as unprofessional.
Are we not surprised that Live by Night, the Ben Affleck directed film that's coming out, that Silence, the Martin Scorsese film, that there's a few big films that are getting good reviews, don't seem to be getting the sort of awards buzz? Is there a reason for that?
I think that's a fair point. I've read the, Dennis Lehane, again, Gone Baby Gone, and again, Live by Night. I've read the book, and it's a very cinematic and very epic, sweeping book. So you would think that it would lend itself to award season. But no, you're absolutely right. It isn't getting talked about in the same tones as, say, Manchester by the Sea. So I would be intrigued as to why that is.
Yeah. Okay, before you go, James, one last thing I want to talk about. Seeing as we're all sort of being quite candid today, Mel Gibson... He's got his sort of comeback, not his on-screen comeback, but his directing comeback. How do you feel about Mel? Should he be forgiven for the things he said in the past and welcome back, arms open wide? Or
I say welcome back, Mel. Yes, he should be forgiven.
Yeah?
It's easy for me to say because I'm a white boy with a Church of England background, so he's never really offended me.
You're
so
safe.
Perhaps I'm
You're
not
safe.
The best person to
You're
ask.
Safe from Mel.
I mean, the dude has been sat on the subs bench for quite a long time now, and I think it does seem that there is contrition there.
Does he ever felt like? Have you ever got the impression that he's sorry for what he did? That's the thing for me, and I'd never quite got the. It's not about an apology, but maybe more like an explanation or a real sense of like what's going on in his head. I sort of get the feeling maybe he still believes some of those views, but because we all believe in time being a healer, it's sort of okay now. And also, if you make a good film and win a couple of awards, I mean, look at Polanski, you know.
Do you think we've sort of assumed he's sorry?
Is that how apologies work? That the other people make the assumption?
It's like, hey, that Mel Gibson's been quiet for a while. Yeah. He must therefore be sorry.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point you've made, yes.
Will either of you watch Hacksaw Ridge?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really tricky because Mel Gibson was my absolute hero. He's my favourite guy. And the Lethal Weapon films are my favourite love story of all time. And I love Mel Gibson and I sort of really loved him. And then he'd done all this stuff and it's like, oh, Mel Gibson don't love me. I don't know. It's so complicated, isn't it? And you don't know people's real lives and all that. But the recordings of him with his... Lady, so disturbing. That it's like, I don't know.
It is disturbing, but is it not more the rantings of a? I mean, I didn't say madman, but let's just say rantings of a man who's in a terrible place.
Yeah. Well, look, you don't know these context, everything, but I mean, I don't actually know what's gone on. I've just heard stuff, which is so upsetting that it makes you go. I don't think we should be possibly going. All right, mate, do you want more stuff to hear some more?
I mean, if I was asked by Mel to be in his next movie...
Absolutely, 100% yes.
I'd be there like a shot. But there'd be a part of me every day in the car on the way to the shoot going, should I bring it up? Should I just say, Mel, those answer machine messages you left, what was that about? and the policeman stuff, you know, the what was that like, just between you and me?
Yeah,
you know,
he claimed at the Golden Globes that he never said the sugar tits thing. I know, but that's the least of the things.
Anyway, listen, we've got to wrap this up because I want to talk to Brett in depth about Mel Gibson. No. thanks, James. Have a wonderful Christmas. And thank you for...
Two of my favourite human beings in the same room. So, and Adam as well. Three of my favourite human beings.
That's beautiful.
I'm sorry that I've not been able to make it. I love you very much. Dan, I look forward to seeing you in the new year.
So. Yeah.
More Medcap movie mayhem.
Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas, James.
God bless you.
We are going to play one of Brett's songs. These are Christmas songs from films with Christmas themes, or you could even say Christmas movies.
Proper Christmas films.
Proper out and out Christmas movies, aren't they?
They're not ashamed.
Because some Christmas movies aren't really even Christmas movies, are they?
Like Lethal Weapon or Die Hard. They're set at Christmas. I'd say they're Christmas movies.
I watched Singing in the Rain the other day for the first time ever.
What?
I know. I'll talk about that after this. Let's play this song. This is, of course, Thankful Heart, which...
Michael Caine singing.
What more do you want? This is a beautiful Christmas.
With a thankful heart, with an endless joy, with a growing family, every girl and boy will be nephew and niece to me.
Nephew and niece to me.
Will bring love, hope and peace to me.
Love, hope and peace to me.
Yes, and every night will end, and every day will start, with a grateful prayer and a thankful heart. With an open and smile, and with open doors I will bid you welcome what is mine, it's yours. With a glass raised to toast your health,
with a glass raised to toast your health,
and a promise to share the wealth,
promise to share the wealth.
I will sail a friendly course, file a friendly chart, on a sea of love and a thankful heart. Life is like a journey, who knows when it ends? Yes, and if you need to know the measure of a man, you simply count his friends. Stop and look around you, the glory that you see is born again each day. Don't let it slip away. How precious life can be. With a thankful heart that is wide awake, I do make this promise every breath I take will be used now to sing your praise.
Used now to sing your praise.
And to beg you to share my day. Loving guarantee that even if we part, I'll hold you close in a thankful heart. I will hold you close in a thankful heart.
In a thankful heart.
I'm so pleased you picked that. So, listeners, Brett was just saying while the song was on, he was like, oh, I hope I didn't say anything out of order or, you know, that I regret. Because sometimes you get in the heat of the moment in a discussion and you think, well, how much do I really believe that or whatever? He didn't say anything bad, but what I loved was he sort of went, oh, I don't know.
Michael Caine, one of our greats,
mm-hmm.
one of the biggest crimes mm-hmm. the Academy Awards ever did. It wasn't not nominating black people. It was not giving Best Actor to Michael Caine for The Muppet Christmas Carol.
Are you, how tongue-in-cheek is this comment?
I am 100% serious.
Are you really?
Have you seen The Muppet Christmas
yes,
Carol?
Yes, I have. And this is why I'm asking if you're serious.
He is so good. It's the best performance he's ever given.
Mm.
He ain't fucking around. He's yeah. not like, oh, I'm in a Muppet film, I'll be silly. He's like... He's in it.
Yeah.
He cries. It's so moving what he does in that film. I think it's like one of the most committed. I think it's the most committed performance he's ever given. And you watch. It's tricky. You're playing with Muppets. How are you going to pitch
yeah.
it? He's fucking amazing.
Well, a lot of actors will say that you're only as good as the person you're playing opposite. He yeah. obviously walked on set. He probably did it for the paycheck. Saw how good Kermit and Gonzo
yeah,
were,
and
went,
oh,
"I've got to up my game."
Yeah.
These guys
like,
are good.
He was like Brad Pitt on Coward Jesse Ford, and
yeah.
he went,
yeah.
"Holy shit, they're all as good as Casey Affleck."
Yeah. Oh my god.
I'm
in fact,
it.
I think the biggest crime the Oscars are that they have ever can't even speak. I think the biggest crime the Oscars have ever committed is that they haven't nominated any of the Muppets for Best Supporting.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Or at least the Golden Globes could have. Or there's an awards, maybe it's the Emmys, where they do best performance by
a Muppet.
by an ensemble, I was going to say.
Oh, but, yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. But then how would Michael feel if he was nominated as part of an ensemble with puppets?
I think he would be proud. I mean, I would love to know what he thinks of that film, because he talks. It's just
how
the best film he's ever done.
Do you really think?
I 100%. I watch Muppet Christmas Carol every year. It's a fucking masterpiece.
Do you know what? I agree. I think it's brilliant. And I love any version of Scrooge, even
yeah.
bad ones, because it's just such... Why do we love that story
so much?
You
know what? I was thinking about it this morning.
Yeah.
Why is that story the greatest story ever? You know what it is? It's a story about... It's basically a man goes to therapy.
Yeah.
It's a man at a point in his life, and he is...
Involuntary therapy, by
yeah,
the way. Yeah,
it's forced on him.
Yeah,
it's like
sectioned.
Gone to prison. Yeah. And the therapist goes, let's talk about your childhood, let's talk about your patterns of behaviour, and let's talk about where that will lead, unless we can work out ways of
nice.
Changing the way you live your life. And then he wakes up and goes, oh, do you know what? I'm going to break the bonds of my upbringing
yeah.
and my place in the world, and I'm going to start living in a more positive...
Yeah,
beautiful way.
I love it. It should be called, instead of a Christmas Carol, a CBT Carol.
yeah.
Yeah. or a Christmas CBT. That's a good way of looking at it. I think obviously we all love redemption and stories of hope and stuff, but there's something specific about that that we just, more than It's a Wonderful Life, which people cite as one of the all-time greats. But where do you stand on that?
Do you know what? Quite honestly, I think it's a great film. I don't think I've seen it once, and it's like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's no Christmas Carol, you're right.
And we always remember the bit where, you know, the angel makes him not exist, and he sees how his life is, and we think that's the film, but it's actually 5 minutes towards the end.
Yeah,
it's, and you have to go through all this stuff about him having a crap banking job, and you know,
there's a lot of admin in that.
A lot of admin in that film. It's like
too much admin.
It's like 95% build up, and 5%.
Imagine if you'd never existed.
Yeah. It's like two-thirds of acts two and three are in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's weird. But, you know, I like that it exists, you know.
Listen, neither of us wish the film away.
No. If you could have a wish, though, would it be on there?
Yeah.
Christmas, what are your top five Christmas movies, bro?
My top five Christmas movies?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I would go with...
By the way, I'll talk about this because I mentioned it before the song. I watched Singing in the Rain for the first time.
Yeah, that's my favourite film.
Blew my mind. Now, obviously, you have to slightly do that thing where you transport your mind to the time it was made. Like when I first watched Citizen Kane, and I was like, why do people think this is such an amazing film? And I rewatched it almost immediately. I say almost immediate, probably a couple of days later, going, okay, imagine, think about all the other films being made, and then it sort of blew my mind, the technology of it and the vision and stuff. Yeah. What are you doing? I don't feel like Singing the Rain, you have to do that much of a leap.
No, I don't really.
Because I was surprised by how brilliantly paced it was, the camera work, that it was so sort of...
It's funny.
Funny and kind of edgy in a way.
Yeah.
And the themes of, like, you know, should you be, you know, artistic merit versus commercial appeal and all that sort of stuff. I was really, like, quite blown away by it.
It's wonderful.
But it's considered a film you watch at Christmas, although it has nothing to do with Christmas, right? Is that just because it's a musical?
I think because it just makes you happy. And, I mean, I didn't know it was a Christmas film.
Or maybe Easter, like Mary Poppins.
Yeah, it's a... Oh, you're alone and you want to end your life. Watch Singing in the Rain. Oh, everything's all right.
Okay.
It's one of them films.
Okay. So I'd just like to say to anyone that's, you know, considering that option, if Singing in the Rain doesn't work, I'm really sorry that Brett made you think it would. Get your hopes up.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Cut that bit out, Adam. definitely not using that.
Okay, my top five is, I would go number five, Scrooge. With Albert Finney.
Okay. Is this just going to be different versions of Scrooge?
Basically. Number four, Batman Returns.
Yeah. Really?
Love that.
Just because it's set at Christmas. It's not really a Christmas film.
Like a sexy Christmas film.
Yeah, though. Okay.
Three, Nightmare Before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Two, Bad Santa.
Love Bad Santa.
Love Bad Santa.
So much.
One, Muppet Christmas Carol.
Okay, I like it.
You go. Poker. Okay. What you got?
I'll raise you. Do you know what? I would say that Scrooged with Bill Murray.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a perfect film, but for me, it's the ultimate Christmas movie.
That's fine.
Thanks. I'm not looking for approval, Brett, but I am a bit. Trading Places.
Lovely. Can I argue that?
Yeah, go for it.
Right, I'm one of these people who hadn't actually sort of watched Trading Places.
Mm-hmm.
I'd seen the bit where Jamie Lee Curtis gets her wonderful, wonderful breasts out when I was a child.
Okay.
And I'd seen like sort of clips of it, but I'd never actually watched it. And everyone's like, oh, you got to watch Trading Places. I watched it this year.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it hold up for you. Here's the problem with it. It's about an hour and 20 minutes setting up that they're going to trade places. I'm like, you've told me
it's
the
a
plot
wonderful
in
life,
the title.
Isn't it? All over again.
I get it. I kept wanting to go, yes, they're trading places. Get on with it. So it's an hour of setup.
Yeah.
It's in the title. The plot is already... We know the plot because we've read the poster. Get on with it.
I have to say, I had a massive argument with Daniel Lawrence Taylor, a friend of ours both, and about what's funnier, Coming to America or Trading Places, and I was singing Trading Places praises. We actually went to see a screening of it at the Prince Charles Theatre, and about 15 minutes into it, secretly inside I was going, oh my god, this is so slow and there are no gags.
You know why
god.
Coming to America is better? They get to America 10 minutes in.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Okay, Brett, let's talk a little bit about you, because I genuinely didn't think we would get to 46 minutes into the show and still not have got to you. For some reason I thought, because today we're sort of like just talking. There's no prep. But I want to talk about you, because you have had an amazing year. Well, you've had a good year, haven't you? Let's see how I downgraded that really quickly. Now, I think you've had an amazing year. You started the year, you went to America, you shot a pilot.
Yeah.
You've just been on tour doing arenas, theatres.
Yeah.
With Catherine Tate. You've worked with her on a number of things, writing and performing on the tour. The show that you're really proud of, Hoff the Record, won so a Best Comedy. Best comedy show,
yeah.
Yeah, at the
International Emmys.
International Emmys, which is amazing.
It is amazing, given that no one watches it.
Nobody watches it.
Nobody watches how it, except the International Emmys.
It's on Dave, right?
Yeah.
How do they afford that show if zero people are... Will there be a third series?
Honestly, I don't have the answer to that.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because I don't think... I don't know what we need to do other than...
So for people that don't know about the show...
I promise it's funny.
Yeah. People who don't know about this show, it's a mockumentary following David Hasselhoff around trying
to... David Hasselhoff comes to England to sort of sort his life out, mm-hmm. and he discovers that he has an illegitimate German son, mm-hmm. and there's kind of an ensemble of us lot who... I'm his personal trainer, and we have his manager and his assistant and his son and his driver, and we have adventures.
Yeah.
All semi-improvised, and it's...
Yeah. Which James Gill will not be happy about.
Yeah, he will hate it.
And I've seen bits of it. I don't have Dave. My TV is not wired to an actual aerial, so I just watch things on demand. I know, it's crazy. But I've watched bits of it and was always surprised by how funny I thought it was, because it sounds a bit like a naff idea. But it's funny, and obviously the International Emmys thought so.
Yeah.
You would like to think that is enough to commission another series.
I don't
know
how to promote this show. I almost wish we could be honest, because you're not really allowed to do this. I would like to all our posters to say, honestly, I know it sounds shit, but it's fucking good.
Yeah.
I feel like that is...
Why not?
Because you're not really allowed to say that when you do proper promotion. No. But I feel
and
like
you're not allowed to swear either. And
I get it. I get that it sounds... Because when I went in for it, I was like, this sounds awful. And then they showed me a teaser they'd made, and I was like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I was like, I definitely want to do this.
Yeah, well, I think it's a shame that people probably are put off. Maybe it's because Hasselhoff himself has done so many like self-pastiching things, and maybe it sounds like a show it isn't. But it's written and produced by proper comedy people.
Yeah,
so.
It's the people who made An Idiot Abroad. It's exactly what I'm talking about, editing. The show is put together so well, and like, we improvise all the time, and I would be lying if I said, oh, we're amazing all day, because we're mostly shit, but they will pick such brilliant bits, and when you put it all together you go, it's all funny, but like, it was a day of...
That's interesting. That
mostly
it's,
rubbish.
I didn't know it was made by those people, and that's a show that has obviously been edited brilliantly. And they obviously do know, like, to have that trust that they will get stuff out of this when
and
you probably
and they tell story. Like, it's quite an emotional story being told in a very funny. I mean, they're really good. I'm very proud of them. I wish someone would watch it.
People watch the show. People watch it. The other great thing that happened to you recently was you just won an award for best... I mean, you're just award central at the moment. You won an award for Best Supporting Actor at the British Independent Film Awards, otherwise known as BIFA, which isn't an acronym I particularly love, but it's catching on.
Yeah.
But you did. You won a BIFA.
Yeah, that was genuinely surprising. More surprising than the International Emmy, weirdly.
Yeah?
Well, only because I didn't know that was happening.
Yeah. You didn't get any sort of heads up.
No.
Because you couldn't make it to the actual
award
ceremony.
I was doing the Kevin Tate show live, and we were having breakfast. I only found out on Twitter.
Yeah. And no way.
Yeah, and I was just looking on Twitter, and something came up, Best Support, and I was like, who? And it was, I mean, what genuinely an honour and a thing. You just sort of go, I didn't know.
Yeah.
That was a...
So what, hang on, you found out the day after?
I found out I got nominated, yeah. And then the day of the awards was the last show on the Catherine Tate show, so I couldn't go. And I only found out that I'd won. So when I came off stage that night, I turned on my phone and I had relentless death threats from Jamie Dornan fans because he had also been nominated and I had won the award. So that's how I knew I'd won. I was like, oh, Jamie Dornan fans wants
and
to kill
do
me.
Do you think Jamie Dornan would have got death threats from Brett Goldstein fans had he won?
It would have just been you.
It would have been me and James Gill.
You and James
Gill. Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, that's amazing. Yeah. What a lovely thing. Because sometimes if you can't be there, they sometimes go, oh, please be there because, you know, it's sort of, you know, we sort of need you to be. They kind of wink and nudge a bit, but you got none of that.
But I think if you go online, you'll see Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah,
reading out a speech that I wrote for her that she wasn't allowed to read until, and she's good.
Which, by the way, was probably better than if you had collected it yourself.
I would have been very disappointed.
I've seen your stand-up.
I'm making that JD do all my gigs.
But. Yeah. Hey, there's a thing. Yeah.
She's doing Jonglers New Year's Eve.
The film itself, Adult Life Skills, is that available to... I haven't seen it. Yeah. Do you know what? This is crazy of me, but I didn't even know you were in that film.
Right.
I knew about that film, but I didn't know you were in it. Why did I not... They didn't promote it well enough. They didn't say Brett Goldstein in.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think I'm sort of having a... doing very, very well at being in really good things that no one sees.
But hey, you know, this is the art versus commerce debate. You know, do you just want to do good work or do you want to be seen?
Do you want to be never seen?
Yeah. So it's been a good year, right? Or the last sort of couple of months have certainly been amazing for you.
Sure.
Yeah. What's happening next year? I bet you're going to do Edinburgh, aren't you?
Next year.
Are you?
I am working on a new stand-up show, but... I don't know whether I'll take it.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. Why do people do it to themselves?
It's like the Edinburgh Festival. Sort of Stockholm syndrome and masochism and, like, sort of going back to your abusive lover. But I think they've changed.
Two weeks in.
Oh, God.
They're exactly the same.
Yeah.
And I hate myself.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you have an equally good year, or even better, actually.
Sounds like you've had an amazing year, Dan Clark.
I've had a pretty good year, but this show isn't about me.
Oh.
It's with me, but not about me.
Okay.
I've had a good year. Unfortunately, I have to go, well, for good reasons, away for a couple of months at the beginning of next. I'm not going to do this show. A couple of months.
Can you tell us why?
I'm developing something in the United States of America.
Oi, oi!
In Iowa. The producer says he knows someone in LA, so I'm going to Iowa for 2 months.
Are you really?
No. Can you imagine if you actually fell for that? Yeah. I mean, he says he's got contacts in LA, so we're going to develop it.
Iowa's a big, maybe make it down. Good luck.
They did Field of Dreams there.
Yeah.
So unfortunately I'm not going to do the show for a couple of months, which is a shame because I love doing this show. And thanks to all the listeners who listen, and we'll be back in probably March, I would have thought. I don't know why I'm suddenly pronunciating my letters.
Is this it? Are you not going to tell us what your favourite films of the year are?
My favourite films of the year? No, that's what James Gill's all about. No. Yeah. Do you know what? I was thinking about this. I don't know if it has been a bumper year for films, personally. I don't want to be too down or negative, but...
Too James Gill.
I don't want to be too James Gill about it. I don't want to be too positive. But I can't say I've seen tons of amazing films. I've seen better television. Still, for me, the best TV show I watched this year was Deutschland 83. That was my favourite thing. It's not been... I'm hoping. I always get hopeful at this time of year because of the types of films that are up for awards and stuff. But not that. Can you imagine?
It's been a great year for having a film podcast. It's been the worst year for film. Thank you for listening.
It hasn't been the worst year for film, but you know, as I talk to James, the thing about James Gill is he's always far more upbeat about the more mainstream film world. He loves his superhero movies, and I'm a little bit. I used to, but I just feel like, geez, seen this already, haven't I?
Mm.
Same story, different cape is my, that's my thing. That doesn't mean I don't think there are good things in them and that there are parts of them that are entertaining, but just on the whole, I get a bit like, can we see something different?
Did you see The Witch?
Yes, very good film, very good.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Is that it? Yes, please. Brett Goldstein on the poster.
Yes, please. Five stars. Lovely stuff.
Yeah. I'm probably not remembering any films from much earlier in the year, such as that. But, you know. Anyway.
The Witch, Victoria.
Are these your. Are you got, go on, give us your list.
On my top three?
Yeah.
Pete's Dragon.
Yeah? Really?
Yeah.
I was interested in that because of the director. I was like, okay, I like this guy.
Pete's Dragon looks like, and I could be wrong, I have no idea the making of it, that is like an auteur film. Looks like, oh, and someone's been allowed to do
their thing. And then it flopped.
Yeah, they will never be allowed to.
And they'll never be allowed. They'll be, never be given more than $1 million to make a film again.
It's really beautiful, and the beginning is...
And does the story work? Is it compelling? And
it's quite it's surprisingly slow and not like in a bad way. It's like, oh, you're taking your time. It's like sort of emotional. It's almost the closest thing, sort of vibe wise, like E.T. It's like proper.
Well, that's good. I was looking at it the other night on whichever VOD provider I have. The many millions, thinking, do you know what? I'm intrigued by this.
And the first 5 minutes is like. Best opening scene of the year.
Okay, well, there you go. I'm probably going to go home today and watch my, not just one of my favourite Christmas films, but my, if I was in your position and I was being asked about my guilty pleasure, this would be my guilty. I've said
Dan,
it before.
What's your guilty pleasure?
My guilty pleasure is The Holiday.
Wow.
I know.
Genuinely shocking.
That is shocking, isn't it? Because I know it's not the sort of film I normally like, and I know that it's very anodyne and...
Why do I feel so proud of you?
What, for admitting that?
Yeah.
For bringing that to the table? I don't know why it's... Some films just get... I think it was the first time I saw it, I was just in a slightly romantic or lonely or something. I was in an Airbnb on my own... You know, about to shoot up my next little hit of heroin, and I caught... No, I just... I think I was feeling lonely at the time, and I watched this film and it just filled me with warmth, even though the other part of my brain was going, this is terrible. There was a part of me that was going, this is everything you need right now.
I didn't think I could love you more.
What do you think of The Holiday?
Do you know what? I don't think I've seen it, truthfully.
Well, you know, that's Nancy Meyers'
I've
films, right?
I've seen most of her films.
Yeah. And
I imagine that it's 20 minutes too long.
It's 20 minutes too long. It's been graded like it's someone's actually used oil paints. Like, no one's skin looks real in it. All the locations are like postcard locations. None of it's real. If an American watched The Holiday and went, I'm going to home swap with someone in the UK, and they got here and were met by like someone puking in a night bus and you know, a news agent's on the corner, they go, where's this picture perfect,
where's, you know, The Holiday?
But I don't know, I'm a bit of a sucker for a romance.
Yeah,
you know, we need to bring back the romantic comedy.
Okay,
you and me.
All right.
Let's do it.
Yeah, you, me, and Gil.
I've just been told by my producer that we should wrap up. I was like, we should have wrapped up about 2 hours ago. Brett, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to
you. Thank you for having me on.
I hope that they recommission off the record. I hope that someone watches it. I also hope that you get promoted from best supporting to best lead actor, because I think you're a brilliant actor.
Thanks,
and I'd like to work with you as well.
Right. I'd like to work with
I've
you.
Just said it. I've just said it on
that's out there.
It's out there. I can't take that back. So we're going to end the show with what is probably my all-time favourite Christmas song. Again, it's probably been used in many films and TV shows, but it's a standalone piece. This, you can't really get better than The Pogues, can you, Brett?
No.
Yeah. He disagrees.
We've got to wrap up.
Yeah, we have got to wrap up.
You can't get better than The Pogues.
It's hard to get better than The Pogues. Here's a quick one. We haven't got time for this. Maybe there's some stuff you need to cut out, James, so we will quickly say this. How come Christmas, other than the Nat King Cole era of Christmas songs, How come the Christmas song seems to be only connected to the 70s and 80s?
I was thinking that there's something in the charts at the moment. It's like someone trying to do a Christmas song and it's dog shit. And I was thinking, because this, I think since Mariah Carey, right, that was the cutoff point in the last great Christmas song.
Mm-hmm.
Was All I Want for Christmas.
Which is what, that was early 90s?
Early 90s. Because it seems like easy. So if you can nail a Christmas song, you're set for life.
You're set for life. But why do people not do it and not... And why do we love that weird, slightly shitty 70s... Like, because we don't like so many of those bands and artists.
We don't like it in January.
We don't like the rest of their catalogue. Yeah. It's just that weird...
I think maybe it's because when it comes to Christmas, we all feel like children again. And when we were children, we didn't mind synth.
Yeah. There you go. this is the Pogues. I'll see you all next year.
Can you get better than this? Find out next year.
Find out next year when Brett releases his Christmas record. Thank you, Brett, for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'll see you next year. You'll be the first guest of next year's show. So you better achieve quite a lot in the next couple of months, okay?
All right.
Okay, see ya.
Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank, an old man said to me, "Won't see another one," and then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on the lucky one, came in 18-1. I've got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas. When all our dreams come true,
they got cars big as bars, they got rivers of gold, but the windows right through you, it's no place for the old. When you first took my hand on a cold Christmas Eve, you promised me Broadway was waiting for me.
You were pretty queen of New York City. When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the drunks they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The boys of the NYPD choir were singing, "Go away, babe," and the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. If you enjoyed this podcast, please don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes.